Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. Our guest is a Welsh-Indian stand-up comedian and comedy writer who is quickly ascending the UK comedy scene. She is host of the podcast Here to Judge, and her comedy has been described as hilariously oversharing. So I guess today we'll find out how true that is. And please welcome to the show, Priya Hall.
Thank you so much for having me. Welcome. I can't help but overshare, so I'm genuinely concerned about what I'm going to say on this podcast.
I'm ready. Let's find out. I said that to you off air, didn't I? That I feel like within your cute exterior, there's some really strong opinions, and I'm feeling very ready for them.
They do sneak up and they surprise me, so we'll find out together what they are.
Opinion roulette. And to start off, I believe you've got a story to share.
Yes. So as we were saying off it, I never really dated anyone. I just hung out with people I already knew, but like with intent. And in uni, there was a guy I liked. I remember asking him if he wanted to come out on a night out with me and my friends. And he showed up the night of to pre-drinks with his 16-year-old brother. And I did not take the hint. I was like, this is still going to work. And we spent the whole night trying to get his 16-year-old brother into bars. And it was awkward. It was weird. I didn't like it. But the 16-year-old was having fun.
I love it. You wanted a relationship and he brought you a chore.
Yeah, an actual child. What am I meant to do with this?
All of my friends
were like, why is there a 16-year-old here? And I was like, look, no one's to know.
When I was dreaming about kids with you, this isn't what I meant. And so was that a kind of a running theme for you then, that you just kind of put yourself in the vicinity of people you fancied and hope for the best?
That's exactly it, yeah. Or like, I've got quite a big group of friends, so I would just bring people into their orbit and then they would get eaten alive, basically. And I'd be like, why can't I find anyone? Well, Priya.
So you say eaten alive?
Yeah, they're a lot. And I would bring poor, unsuspecting victims over to like pre-drinks and stuff, and they'd be like, what the hell is happening? There are 15 idiots in this house. And I'd be like, yeah, sorry.
Meet the family.
Because I have like hardly any dating stories, I messaged that group of friends asking them if they had any dating stories that I could recount, and almost all of them were absolutely horrifying. And I was like, geez, how have any of us made it to adulthood? This is a mess.
Wait, so ones that you had blocked out of your memory or their stories?
Their stories.
Right.
Because they're a real horror show. The one of them was saying that she accidentally ended up on a blind date because she thought she knew who she was texting and it turned out to be someone different. And then apparently while she was on a date, all of the bar staff kept coming up to her and telling her that her friend Angela was ringing for her, like they were proactively trying to help this poor girl. And she did not pick up on it and continued on a date with a complete stranger. Why did she do that? Idiots.
Who knows, bless her. And so even if you don't feel like you've had a huge amount of dating experience, do you feel like there's maybe certain mistakes or certain things you had to work on to get into the relationship you're in now?
I guess. I mean, we've been together for 6 years now, so we sort of had to we got together when we were 22 and we're both 28 now. So obviously over that time, different issues arise and you've got to sort of learn to deal with them, especially when you're like turning into an adult. It was a bit of a learning curve. But I mean, 6 years in, we're still together, even in lockdown. So.
And do you mind me asking what kind of life stage you got together?
We met in work, so we'd both just finished uni and we were working in a call centre. And he only asked me out because I was about to quit my job to go on holiday because I've got poor impulse control. So he was like, well, she's going to be gone, so I may as well ask her out now.
I mean, have you ever asked him how long he fancied you for? Or was it less impulsive than it sounds?
He says he did before, but I think it was literally, I was like, I'm quitting this job. And he was like, this is a completely risk-free move that I'm making. And I was like, I fully respected it. I was like, do you know what? I'm going away in a bit. So yeah, why not?
Well, that's it. It also sounds like a conveniently low expectation risk as well. It's like, yeah. Okay, I'm going to date a girl that I know because I've worked with her. I've not had to actively seek her out and meet her, but she's not going to be working with me anymore, so I don't have to see her every day. And now she's going on holiday.
Yeah, she'll be out of the country for 3 weeks, so if I need to disappear, I can.
So I get to clock up 3 weeks of having a girlfriend whilst doing very little.
It was the perfect plan.
And you fell for it by the sounds of it.
Yeah, he really hoodwinked me.
So were you interested from the start or did you want to see how it went?
When we first met, he had a girlfriend. So I was like, I did that thing that you do where you're like, that's not an option. So when he asked me out, it was a surprise. It's partly because I was like, do you not have a girlfriend? He was like, no, we broke up.
Yeah, I'm really trying to decipher all of this. So how long had you been broken up for?
Not long. I'm just going to say that in case anyone we know listens to this podcast. There was no overlap, but it was not long.
Not long enough.
Like a day, which is pretty bad.
Okay, really not long then.
No, I love me a red flag.
And were there any others then?
So when I started this job, I remember having like the manager taking me around and telling me like the rules of the office. And one of the rules of the office was, even though this is a call center and you wouldn't see people face to face, you are to wear office clothes. Do not come in your pajamas. And I was like, why is that a rule? Who has made it so that that needs to be a rule? My partner of 6 years made it so that has to be a rule because he came in his pajamas once. So many red flags. Oh my God. I'm reassessing now.
What a guy. I mean, is that going to be the plot of this podcast? We just gradually turn you against him. So tell me some of his good qualities.
He's very kind. We have the same political leanings. He's very, I would say he's much more sensible than I am. Like, he's a teacher. He's very steady and sensible. And then there's this clown just destroying everything she touches.
And do you feel like, to an extent, you kind of need that to balance you out?
Maybe. I think we work quite well together in that, yeah, he deals with my nonsense quite well and I deal with his nonsense very well. And if I've learned anything in lockdown is that you need that, because we've been dealing with a lot of each other's nonsense. So
what kind of things?
Just like, no one should be spending 24 hours a day with one person.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you've just like realised, like we've lived together since a year into being together. So like 5 years anyway. But there's things that I've realised in lockdown about his domestic habits that have been completely mind-blowing. I've been like, what is wrong with this? Like, I keep finding banana skins in the bathroom and being like, why are you eating bananas in here? What's going on? What is this?
I'm scared to ask, but are they next to the bath or the toilet?
The bath.
Okay,
the toilet would be, yeah, I would have moved out if it had been like on top of like the system. So I'm like, this is too much.
Or you find a little plate there and you realise he's eating off it.
Just like a little bowl. No, not quite. But I think we're only a few months off that. If we are in lockdown for much longer, I would not be surprised.
My flatmate at the moment has a habit of leaving mugs on surfaces which I strongly feel mugs do not belong, like the floor and sofas. And I have spilt a lot of tea and I don't even drink tea.
That's fair. Any place that's precarious is like a no-go in our house because my partner breaks a lot of like crockery and glasses, and I spill things all the time. But yeah, leaving stuff on the floor, that really, really gets on my nerves. Do you want to hear the most boring aspect of our relationship at the minute? The only thing we are arguing about at the moment is whether or not to get a robot vacuum cleaner. Because we have a cat, and so he has lots of cat hair, and we're both very lazy, so we don't want to hoover. So I'm like, if we get a robot vacuum cleaner, that'll solve that problem. But my partner thinks that we would have to declutter our lives to do that, and he's not willing to do it. So that's the major argument at the minute, is whether or not to get a robot vacuum cleaner. How boring is my life? I need to leave this back.
Get her back on stage. You need it. You literally need the stage to give you stories for the stage.
That's why I want the robot. An audience, someone to talk to.
What about the cat, no?
He does not like being spoken to. He's very mean. He's mean to me.
Okay, sure. I feel that that cat needs to learn some respect.
Yeah, he does. He does, but very much he rules the roost.
How did you let it get like that?
This podcast is just going to be me describing the many ways I'm losing my mind in lockdown.
It's relatable content, yeah.
I bought my cat some buttons so he can learn to talk. So that's how we let it get to this point. It's because I'm completely obsessed with him and respect him too much. I do not consider
okay,
him
so
a tiny little prince.
To help people that are very confused, no doubt, by the cat rabbit hole we've gone down, I think from my understanding, this maybe came from TikTok, where people have learned that you can train a cat to press a button. It generally seems to be for things that they want. So, like, you can train it a food button very easily. You can't really train a I love you button so well.
No. You can train them to do angry very well, apparently. They can express dissatisfaction very easily.
So got that in common just with Simon Cowell. Love it.
So far, we're just trying to train him how to tell us when he's hungry. But one thing about my partner is most people would be like, absolutely, we're not doing that. That's insane. He completely got on board with it just seconds into me talking about it. He was like, great idea, let's do it. So,
I mean, honestly, that might be the biggest selling point of him I've heard so far, because I prize respect from my cat to a big degree. And so it makes me happy that if I tell her no, she runs away and then comes back and like rubs up against me and tries to like get back in my good books. If my flatmate says no to her, she tends to just stare at her. And that is the level of respect I can appreciate from an animal, and it stops her doing a lot of naughty shit. But I also have the flip side of that, of like, particularly in lockdown, like yourself, the cat is a very big part of my life. And so possibly my low point in that was over the summer, she found a new obsession with flies. And I didn't dislike it because she got quite good at catching them, but also very confused by them. So she would catch them eventually. So it kept us fly free, but I ended up gradually starting to help her more and more. I would just shut her and the flies into the corridor because it's brightly lit. There's no windows for them to hide on, and she can just figure it out because...
So corralling the flies, like kettling them.
Yeah, and I feel like I should say before I get cancelled over this, our windows are those like safety windows where I can't open them enough to get a fly out. And we're on the ninth floor. So that me releasing the fly into the wild wasn't really an option in lockdown. And I think this is a nice sign, though. The fact that we've got such first world problems about lockdown really, you know, it's something, yeah. Right? It's not something to be proud of, but it's something in some way.
A small reassurance.
Yeah, maybe. That's what we'll say. And so the low point for me was this escalated more and more. And one day I found myself helping her hunt a fly because she just kept losing it. It would just land somewhere. She would get ready to pounce on it and it would fly away and she would not know where it had gone. As soon as it left her eye, she just kept staring at the same spot, waiting for it to reappear.
That's so cute.
It's so ridiculous. So then I would help her hunt the fly by also, in a very dramatic clown-like way, pretending to also run around the corridor after the fly. We have a small corridor, right? It's as ridiculous as it sounds. And the pinnacle of this was I was trying to, like, pretend to bat at the fly to indicate where it was. And she caught on, and it really helped her hunting. We were a great pack. And the real pinnacle of the whole thing was at one point it came and almost flew into my mouth, and so I managed to bat it away with, you know, the listeners can't see, but I'm doing my hand like it's a paw and just batted it away, and it hit the floor right in front of her and she slammed her paw down on it, and that was that. And so we killed a fly together, and that was strangely one of the most interesting things that happened that day.
To me, that is not a low point of lockdown. That is like a pinnacle of teamwork. Teamwork makes the dream work. You and your cat are an excellent team.
Yeah, so I don't know if she respects me or pities me, to be honest, after that story, but we get along. Anyway, we've addressed cats. So back to dating. You're figuring out these kinks together. Have there been any things you've really enjoyed about spending so much time together?
Yeah, so when we first got together, I wasn't then doing comedy. It wasn't until quite a bit later into our relationship that I started doing comedy. And I also work full time, so it would be work 9 to 5 and then get straight in my car and go do gigs. And that had sort of become the norm. So we went from spending a lot of time together to spending hardly any time together. So lockdown obviously has been awful for most and all people. But being able to spend more time with him has been off. And also it's sort of, it has brought us closer together. I can't really complain because so many people obviously have struggled being with their partners in lockdown. He's been good as gold when I've been stressing out and having mental health crises left, right and centre. It's been quite affirming of our relationship, but obviously. Ideally, we'd be able to leave the house and do that. But it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. For as much as we joke, lockdown has been awful. Obviously had massive mental health impacts on people. And so has he been able to kind of support you in that as well? Or was there an element of you teaching him what kind of support and love you needed through the relationship, and particularly this time?
I mean, everyone has struggled in lockdown. So we've both had our moments where it's been like, I really need the support of another person. So we've both had to step in or like just be there for one another. One thing to say about me and my partner is because we've been together so long and mental health crises are no new thing to us, we've both had times where we've had to depend quite a lot on the other one. So, but sort of fortunately, we knew what the other one needed when it came to it in lockdown. So at least we had experience of that. I imagine for people who are completely new to it, it's absolutely terrifying. But at least we had that, where it was like, well, we've been together long enough now to know what is needed and when.
I like the idea of that.
It feels a bit like I'm bragging, but actually my partner knows when I'm having a mental health crisis.
It's not necessarily the most clean brag of like, oh, my partner knows so well my deep crushing struggles.
Sure. He gets it. And by guess it, I mean recognises it, because he's seen it a number of times.
And do you find ever that he's at a point where he's recognising it better than you are?
Definitely. Because I am, at my very core, a 12-year-old child. Whenever anyone suggests anything to me, I get really stubborn. I'm like, I don't want to do that now. And whenever he's like, do you think maybe ring the doctor? And I'm like, I would rather die. Don't tell me how to live my life. When he's like, maybe you want to take some vitamin D because you've not left the house in like 6 days? I'm like, no.
Aww.
So that's a lot of fun for him.
But it sounds like he's approaching it quite softly, which I think is the way to go.
Very much sensible. And he's learned that from experience.
Yeah, that's been a big learning for me, actually, in relationships, but also friendships, is how I approach when people are struggling. And I think I had, in some ways, quite a typical male and also logic type person, you know, thinking more so than feeling approach to things. I would just want to fix everything. I would want to like come up with a strategy. Or if not, okay, we're just going to wrap you up in a duvet and give you some ice cream and then it's okay. Like I felt such a need to sort of sort things. Mm. And it's been a real process of learning that actually listening without a solution can be just as helpful.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, as you were saying, a very like male, typically male upbringing of being like, you need to always have a solution for something. I think that's an issue a lot of people face.
Yes, emotions can't just be out there in the wild. Who knows what will happen? We've got to find a way to sort them. Yeah, so that's been something very much to work through. And so your relationship sounds great. And given that you've described yourself as not having a huge amount of dating experience, I think you've done very well to get in something that sounds so healthy with so few false starts, unless there's false starts you're not telling me about.
There were, but I was in uni, so I don't really count them. I was just a little baby. You're meant to make mistakes when you're a little baby, right?
Maybe not involving sex. I think we could get in trouble for saying that. But do you have any you're up for sharing?
Yeah, so I was in a relationship from like second to third year of uni, which was very, I don't know, it happened very suddenly, where it got very serious very quickly. And he like moved in with me like 5-6 months into our relationship. And that ended spectacularly because he cheated on me with my housemate.
Oh.
Which was a lot of fun. Yeah, you're meant to have like drama when you're young and stupid. I mean, it was hard at the time, sure, but it's fine, isn't it? Teen drama when you're in your early 20s. That's fine, isn't it? That's allowed.
Yeah, sure.
Is it?
I mean, at the time, I'm sure it must have been pretty horrific. Do you mind painting the picture of kind of how you found out and like what was the explosion?
Oh, okay. If the housemate in question is listening to this, which you may well be, souls to bring this up. So I worked throughout uni in a restaurant and I was working nights in that restaurant. I came home and all of my friends were on a night out and my partner had gone on a night out with them. And then two of my friends came home and like reported back like the little snitches they were, which I respect. I like a good snitch.
As long as they're on your side.
That's what I found out. Yeah, obviously. I mean, snitches get stitches unless they're snitching to me. Yes?
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
So they reported back. And then it was very dramatic and a lot of fun. No, it wasn't.
So did you confront him then when he got back?
Yeah, straight away. It was fine. It was like teen drama. And I was in uni and everyone was drunk all the time. So it was done and over really quickly, even though it had been like it escalated really quickly into a serious relationship and went on for like probably a year and a half. That last couple of days was just like, done.
I guess that's the better alternative than you clinging on to it, maybe at that point, you know, if that's the way your mind works, that just cuts off the possibility of that person going forward, then you're best to just address it up front. So in the time between you being told and him coming back, had you got a whole speech prepared?
I think I was just confused because the friends that were reporting back to me were also, they were so drunk. I remember it being quite funny trying to like get details from them and then be like, look, I feel like we were in Walkabout, but I don't know where we were. I was like, okay, all right, I see what's going on. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to get details like I want. But it all happened very suddenly. And then I think we were going on like a trip to Amsterdam the next day. So again, it was very just like, it was done like that, because I was on holiday the very next day, just like, no, well, I guess we're dealing with this on the run.
Wait, so was he going on the holiday with you?
I think the plan was for him and my housemate to come, but neither of them did, which is sensible on their part.
So it was just you?
It was like a bunch of my other friends were there as well. Okay. Imagine if I'd gone on a solo holiday the day after hooking up with my uni boyfriend.
That would have been, if you're going to cry, you might as well do it next to
complete strangers on a plane.
Yeah, they love that, don't they?
Famously.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I don't even remember what my next question to that was, because this it's interesting. I know we've only had two examples so far, but it does feel like there's a bit of a theme emerging about holidays, either starting or ending relationships for you.
That is true. And I don't go on holiday very much. Maybe that's why I'm in a long-term relationship now, because I've just not been on holiday in ages.
Maybe you shouldn't. Let's not risk it. You just stay home, worry about the vacuum and whether or not it's a robot.
Yeah, there's a real catalyst for drama for me, booking a holiday.
If you'll pardon the pun. And by contrast then, so you've got into this stable relationship now that sounds like it's going pretty well. Has there been any chat about engagement type stuff? Has there been ever found a little box?
No, so I...
Never searched for a little box?
No, I wouldn't say I'm opposed to marriage, but I definitely don't intend it for myself, okay. Ever. So, and my partner's fine with that, which is fortunate. My parents divorced when I was like 2, and each of them have had fairly spicy dating histories. So it never really appealed to me, so I never really thought of, that's not really what I pictured in my future. And now, as a grown-up, I can't imagine spending that much money on a wedding. For why? To be married? No, thank you. Fortunately, like I said, my partner is completely on board with that. I'm fine with it.
Never heard
my boiler running.
I cannot hear your boiler, no.
Okay, good. There's a tap in my house where if my partner uses it, the boiler starts kicking off. And every time I do a podcast, I tell him, do not touch this tap. And every time he forgets. So apologies if that's on the audio.
I love it. We've heard all sorts so far. We had a whole adventure with Tanya Moore. She had her niece in the background and my Zoom cut out at one point and she just kept talking and then just gradually slowed down more and more as she started to realise I wasn't sitting that still and I had indeed frozen.
I'm here alone.
And then it was sort of this thing that by the time we got back on, neither of us really knew where it had cut out. So that was good fun to edit, but it's real, isn't it? That's the lives we're living in. And so for your parents, they had this divorce and then they went on to have other relationships, is that right?
Yeah, and other divorces each. Both big fans of divorce is what I've learned from my childhood.
So they've really collected the marriages and divorces on your behalf.
Yeah. They like a spicy time, do my family. So not a great example of marriage on either side, so never really appealed. I mean, it's had a positive impact on me in that I exist. Also, I think it's definitely on my mum's part. So my mum is Indian, and when she married my dad, it was like a huge deal in her family. She was disowned for a while. It wasn't until later on, after she had me and my brother, that she was sort of welcomed back into the family. And even then, it was a bit like... But my mum is so liberal, and from that experience, has, like, no expectations for me relationship-wise. She's just like, do what you need to be happy and stable, and that's fine. So that is a good thing, definitely. It sucks that she had to go through that to get to that point, but yeah, this definitely benefited me.
What a way, I guess, to bring something positive out of it, you know, your outlook and just trying to very much do the opposite.
Yeah, for sure.
And is there an element of cause and effect with her having the kids and then being welcomed back into the family, or was it just that they'd calmed down?
So this is going to get very real very quick.
Okay,
so if you don't want to use this in the podcast, that's fine. So my mum and my dad, they were pregnant with my brother before they got married. So their family knew about my brother before disowning her and still disowned her. And then she had me. And by the time she had me, she was like talking to her parents again, but like distant family, no contact. And then when I was 2, my mum was diagnosed with a brain tumour and had to have an operation. And it all got very serious very quickly. And at that point, the family started talking to her again because they were like, oh, she might actually die, so we should probably have a chat. She's fine now, so that's a happy ending. That's basically why they were faced with the prospect of not having her in their lives whatsoever ever again. So but I was very small, I don't remember it. Oh, she's got lots of jokes out of it. So maudlin with her sense of humour. Are they funny? No, they're not funny. But she is fun.
I kind of have to hear one now.
Oh, I don't know if they're jokes. She just frequently jokes about how she was disowned from the family. Whenever she acts up in like a family wedding, she'll be like, what are you going to do? Disown me? And I'm like, Jesus Christ, Mum. Maybe you want to relax.
Have you not learned your lesson here?
Exactly.
And what's your relationship been like with that side of the family?
It's okay. I mean, I'm like obviously aware of everything that went down when I was a little baby. But my grandparents are now very supportive of my mum. All of the expectations that they put on my mum, I think they sort of realised later on that that was the wrong thing to do and obviously could have lost them, their daughter. So they're a lot more laid back with my generation, I would say. Also, my mum was the first person in her family to enter into an interracial relationship publicly. But that preceded a lot of her cousins also being like, oh, by the way, I am also married to a white man. So it was very much like a reckoning for them. So by the time we came along, everything's fine now. We get along fine.
Oh, wow. So she really took the bullet for the family there.
Yeah. A lot of her cousins were keeping quiet before. You're like, oh, you couldn't have piped up now.
Wow, that's so shady. But it seems like you're really capitalising on it now because you're like, now a job in the arts for the grandchild.
Oh, I'm having a lovely time. My grandparents do not get what I do in any way, shape or form, but they're very supportive. They ring me up. So I did Stand Up For Live Comedy on the BBC and it was like my first like big TV appearance and my granddad watched it and he rang me up afterwards and was like, you looked great. Do you need money for clothes? I was like, no, Grandad, I choose to look like that. They do their best to be supportive now.
Aw.
They've learned.
That's cute. Just throw some money at her. She clearly needs
it. Yeah. Absolute state of her.
Not like, in those days.
How I choose to look.
Yeah, I had the experience a little while back of trying to explain to my great aunt what comedians do. And I realised that neither of us had any crossover of context. And also, with my family being Irish, I was really struggling to be like, I can't tell you off the top of my head in that moment who is of her era that I could tell her about. The nearest I could get is like, Terry Wogan, he did jokes, right?
Close enough.
Yeah, he did, you know, funny stuff with the Eurovision. Some people are on the stage when they're doing their funny stuff. But maybe you'll be like a Grace Helbig where eventually you'll write a book and then your parents and your grandparents can just have the book to display and say, look, this is what our daughter does.
Yeah, they'll have something material to point to apart from me just clowning in front of people in pubs.
And how have you found being away from your work? Has that created any tension at home?
Definitely. So comedy is my creative outlet and not having that as things have been weird. But it's getting a lot better. I find that obviously loads of it has moved online and it's quite nice sometimes to finish a gig and be like, it's 9 o'clock and I'm in my house. And I don't now have to drive like 4 hours in like dark country roads in the middle of the night and then go to work tomorrow. But it's taken a while to get to that. And I think that's been a source of quite a lot of tension from me, because I'm like, I've got nothing to do and I'm going mad. My partner's like, maybe you want to relax.
Well, I think it's one of those things, you get so used to having the creative outlet that then what would you do without it? I'm so glad that I run my own podcast, because I don't quite know how people live with the threat of their podcast being cancelled or their TV show.
Yeah, at the mercy of someone else.
This is so much more than work, you know, when you're this into it.
Also, I think it's like the sheer amount of time spent doing it as well. So before lockdown, I was used to getting up at like 6 a.m. to go to work and then not getting home until like gotten midnight. And that was just my normal working day. And you get used to it. So then when all of a sudden you've got all of this free time, you're like, oh no, the thoughts are creeping in. What's going on? This is like, what do I do with all of this time? imagine it was weird for my partner to watch that process for me, just sat on the sofa like, and what now? I'm meant to be working constantly and I've got nothing to do. Really bizarre. A real bizarre feeling. That's why I'm teaching my cat to speak. I just need something to do.
I can't perform, so you must perform.
Yes, basically.
One of us has to be doing this. Wow.
I'll perform to him and he'll be able to like verbally express his distaste.
That what's going to be the next stage is you're going to get the cat an applause button and you're going to be desperately like jumping around trying to be funny for the cat.
Nothing. Just a blank stare directly into my soul. Okay.
And so we're at the bit of the show where we need to try and establish a rule of the game each. Have you got something dating-wise you try and live by, or relationship-wise?
I would say be flexible, because if you're going to be in a long-term relationship, things are going to change quite a lot over the course of time. And that's like quite a serious one, isn't it? I've got nothing funny on that. You just need to be able to get on board with it.
Yeah, I mean, flexible with some things, maybe not flexible with your morals or standards, I guess.
Flexible with everything, Robbie. Morals, standards, all of it.
Okay, well, this is where I think to myself, God, I hope he's a decent man, because apparently you've already handed over your soul. As if your cat wasn't controlling your life enough. Now you're just like, oh, this stable person who, not for nothing, as a teacher is somewhat parental, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, I wouldn't say somewhat parental, even as a teacher. Sometimes I overhear his lessons and I'm like, what is going on in there? When I say be flexible, I mean both sides of the relationship, because... Yeah.
Okay, so if neither of you have morals or boundaries, then that's okay. Is that what you're pitching?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate you really being here to prove that the rules of the game should be taken with a pinch of salt. So thank you for that. But no, I think the core of what you're saying does make a lot of sense. I don't think I've been in something as consistent as you have for as long. So I will think about that if I ever get to that stage, to try and be flexible. I'm going to also contribute a silly rule of the game, because one thing I've learned when I was briefly able to date in the kind of somewhat things lifting between lockdowns of it all, was that I actually don't know if I am going to actively date anybody who already has a pet. I have decided that maybe one of the rules of the game, for me at least, is if you already have a pet, you won. You're the one with the pet now.
Yeah, definitely.
Because
what if those pets don't get on?
Exactly. And there was a lot of time I was thinking about that. And also one particular person I went on some dates with had a dog where the dog was lovely. The dog was trained. Was the dog trained to the standard I would want to spend time around? I'm not as sure. And I jokingly suggested at one point, oh, we'd have to be careful that I don't end up being the pack leader, because I'll expect the dog to really behave around me. And he laughed. And I think he did not realise that was... it was a joke. But also, I was like, no, this is probably how this relationship would play out.
Yeah, your dog is going to become my dog.
Yeah, it's... Maybe it's like my cat Milan. It's like, she doesn't have to behave for everybody, but she has to behave for me. And then I get to keep this idea that she's this perfect animal and she's such a delight. And my co-host Danielle recently told me, in a very polite and soft way so as not to upset me, I don't think she's quite as sweet as you think she is, Bobby. Given that every time she sees Danielle, she just kind of like randomly bats at her shoulder or arm for like attention, has been known to bop her. She usually wears a bun quite a few times and it's not appreciated.
That seems fair. I'm the same with my cat in that I'm like, he's a precious little baby, but I do have to warn people if they come in the house. He's quite bitey. He will bite you, but he's very lovely. And they're like, is he though? Is he biting people for you?
I love that. Oh, no, that's cute to me. That shows how down the rabbit hole I am. I'm like, yeah, get it to bite me. Why not? I'm just glad for the attention. I'm just happy to be seen. So yeah, so I guess that's my one, is get a pet first, beat them to it.
Great show.
All right, we will wrap up there. Thank you so much. If people want to find you, they can obviously go listen to Here to Judge podcast, where you scour the internet for ridiculous scenarios and then try and solve them. which I love as a concept, because these people will likely never know that you've gone to such great lengths to figure out their problems.
Some of them are legitimately concerning. You read them and you're like, this person should not be on the internet. They shouldn't be allowed to have access. Let's ban them from the internet forever. But it's a lot of fun. And I record that with Layla Navabi and Robin Morgan, who are two Welsh comics. We have a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, and I think you really slip even more into your accent during it.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So, yeah, so you can go listen to Welsh people solving problems on your podcast, and you can find you on social media at Priya Hall everywhere, right?
I think it's at I am Priya Hall on Twitter, because I couldn't get Priya Hall. Someone else already had it. I did it.
I am Priya Hall. Were you convincing yourself or other people?
Just need that affirmation every day.
All right, we'll wrap up there and then we'll do a quick bit for Patreon.
Cool.
Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.